Welcome to the NFL Stock Exchange Podcast. In this episode, it is our Stock Watch Wednesday episode, which means we are taking a look at the NFL draft order as it stands right now following week 10 in the NFL. We're going to take a look at what the draft order was the week prior, and we're going to see the movement from all the teams, who's picking a little bit higher in the order, who's picking lower because of the wins and losses that we saw this past weekend, and we're going to evaluate what kind of players and what kind of strategies a lot of those teams in the top 15 could be deploying if this is the final order, if they were picking in this spot, if the draft were this weekend. We're also going to give you six players that we watch from over the weekend, tell you their stocks, whether we think it's up, down, and where we believe they could be drafted. I'm Trevor Sikkema. With me, as always, is Connor Rogers. Let's ring the bell. Welcome to the opening bell of the NFL Stock Exchange Podcast. I'm Trevor Sikkema. That is Connor Rogers joining you guys on a Wednesday edition of the show, which means it is time for a little stock market update. We're talking about players and prospects for the 2023 NFL Draft. It could be on the up, could be on the down. But also, Connor, because it is that time of the year, we're going to give a stock market update to the draft order itself. November and December are the exciting times where we really pay attention to the draft order as it changes every single week. Different look every single time we do this podcast here. Even though the names might be the same, the order of where they are picking could end up changing everything. So we figured we should probably look at this on a weekly basis from now on, which, my friend, I am very excited to get to because it always makes for a good conversation of what could be come April.
Me too. I think this show has evolved from being just our introducing a lot of different players that are on the rise or could be on the rise and very early draft surface level kind of stuff to now you got to connect the how the league is factoring into this, you know, this giant puzzle. Honestly, it's I'm sure there are fans of the Texans, the Raiders, the Panthers, the Eagles, because they have the Saints pick, that want to hear how the top 15, top 10, top five is looking of the draft. So it is. This is honestly where it gets really, really fun, because now you could start to dream big. You could start thinking of those jersey swap photoshops and coming to life and all of that. So it's exciting, man. But like we always do, we will do the top 15, top 10, top five, but we will end this show with our players on the rise as well.
Yeah. Always fun to get into jersey swap season. That's always my favorite part. Y'all out there, there's so many talented graphics designers who have just either freelanced it or do it for a living or whatever it is, that y'all never cease to amaze me how quick and you are with
some
with
not so much. Go. Some really bad swaps out there that make my day just as much as the good ones. I want to be clear. The ones that look like they have a flak jacket on or whatever it may be, big helmets. I want to let you know that I appreciate those just as much. So thank you very much.
I'm an extremely amateur, like, jersey swap person. Well, I will do like the terrible cutout of a guy's head and then just using the Instagram app, just like place the head just like straight on an image that already exists. That's me. That's my level of jersey swapping, but it doesn't really get much. It doesn't get much more skilled than that. So that's about as far as I go in that world.
I love it. All right. Let's take a look. I mean, let's get into it, as plenty of teams that have been losing continue to lose this weekend. If you listen to What Matters Most, isn't it funny, kind of funny, Trevor? I'm sure the people that listen to all three shows we do a week, or at least the first two of the week, it's like if you root for one of the teams that barely got any play on What Matters Most, the good news is your teams get all of the play the following show. So we're all about balance here on the NFL Stock Exchange.
That is very true. That's actually a great way to look at it. I never even thought about it like that. And you're right. I do feel bad just for a lot of the teams that we don't talk about on Monday, just because we're out here talking about a lot of the teams that are winning, that are playing in the biggest games, that have a lot of playoff implications. But then Wednesday, we're right around here giving the full scope for NFL fans that didn't get a lot of words on Monday. Here you're going to get plenty of words on a Wednesday. So which one should we do first? Do you want me to read off the order as it stands right now, or do you want me to read the order as it was last week and then do how it is now?
Let's go through the new order, maybe highlight if there were any massive changes, and then really get into the meat and potatoes of what some of these picks could be.
Okay. All right. So I'll fire this off. This is what the order is following week 10 in the NFL. Houston Texans still have the number one overall pick, so not a change there. Las Vegas Raiders now sitting at number two overall. Those are two teams that have separated themselves from the pack. The Houston Texans are 1-7-1. And then the Las Vegas Raiders are 2-7. The rest of these teams that I'm going to name either have 3 wins or 4 wins as we go through the top 15. Carolina Panthers are sitting there at number 3. And there's a handful of teams tied for number This is 9 teams with 3 wins or either 3-6 or 3-7. So obviously the teams that are 3-7 are going to be a little bit higher in the order.
Those don't have their own picks. Isn't it crazy? It's great. Like, you have all these teams that have the same records, but most of them don't even have their picks. So you have all these other fan bases that are having a good year that are rooting for that race to break up.
I want to have that exact conversation in a second. I'll get through the order. Carolina sitting here at number 3. The Philadelphia Eagles, because of the New Orleans Saints, are sitting there at number 4. New Orleans is 3-7, just having a terrible season, but Philly owns that pick, crazy enough. Jacksonville, they're back in the top 5. They're currently picking number 5 overall. Chicago Bears at number 6. Then we've got the Seattle Seahawks via the Denver Broncos, the Detroit Lions via the Los Angeles Rams, and the Houston Texans via the Cleveland Browns at 7, 8, and 9. Pittsburgh's at 10, Detroit's at 11, Atlanta Falcons at 12, Arizona Cardinals at 13, Green Bay Packers are sitting there at 14, and then the Indianapolis Colts sitting there at 15. We talked a little bit last week whether or not we thought the Colts were going to start to creep into the top 10. Not so fast, my friend. Not yet, at least. The Saturday era starting off 1-0, baby. Dude, it is wild that we have 4 picks in the top 9 that do not belong to their original teams. Now, I'm wondering, my question to you is, Connor, do you think that this year, let's say that it ends up something like this, where all 4 of these picks are in the top 10, would that deter teams in the future? Do you think this draft in particular will deter teams from maybe going as all in towards the F them pick strategy that we've seen from the Rams and so many other teams? Because you realize that, like, damn, okay, we got burned pretty hard here. We made a trade that we thought was going to make a major difference for us, and now we're not even picking in the top 10 of the NFL draft. Because, shoot, man, even if you're not picking, like, late 20s like you thought, you start getting in the top 15, top 20, especially top 10. That hurts, man. That hurts the pride, and it hurts the team building a lot. So I'm curious, do you think that this is going to have a ripple effect in the next couple of years?
Largely, no. Now, there are a few examples of, yes, it does matter. Process, right? That's what we're talking. We're talking about process here. The Rams would do that 100 times because they won a Super Bowl with Matt Stafford. So the Rams, as much as they're probably not thrilled how this year has gone, you can never sit here and say what the Rams did was not worth it because they won a Super Bowl. So and I'm not saying the Rams won the trade against the Lions. Like, it's not that. But the Rams definitely won the end they wanted, and the Lions can still win it. It's actually a weird trade that could be a grand slam for both sides. You look at the Browns, they had to know the situation that Watson was going to be suspended one of the years that they were giving that selection to Houston. So, and they still think Watson can take them over the top. We'll see. So no. Denver, as much as you can poke holes in that process now, like I do think there is something to a lot of people overlooked that Russ was not necessarily the same guy at the end there in Seattle, and some of it was health related, and those two things have carried over to Denver. Chasing a franchise quarterback is a process, Trevor, that we will never see go away. Like, there'll be millions of teams lining up to do this again. The one, and I saved it for last on purpose, that we definitely we criticized at the time. So I'm not like straw man argument or anything like that here. There's a show somewhere in this feed of however many shows we've done, over 100 now. The Saints trade never really made a ton of sense value-wise and process-wise. So they just thought they were better than they were. And for the crowd that loves to scream, the cap is a myth. Eventually you do lose good players. If you always say that over and over again, and I love Chris Olave, and I get being aggressive for a player of his talent, but, and I know Trevor Penning's been hurt. That's what a lot of people would counter to me. I don't really think Trevor Penning is going to be your savior franchise tackle. The Saints process to me, Trevor, is the one that you could poke holes in, and teams should look around and go, man, you should know when to fold your cards and walk away from the table.
Yeah. That one's
tough.
They
thought they were still a contender this year.
They did still think that they were a contender this year.
I thought they'd do better than this.
I did. Yeah, I did too. Because I'm trying to remember all of the elements of the Saints trade because I don't want to be too hard on it. Eagles traded
kind of bad from the get-go.
Eagles traded 16 and 19 for 18 overall, and then a 2023 first-round pick, and then a 2024 second-round pick. So essentially, the Saints, I think, went into this draft class saying that we wanted a top-tier offensive playmaker and we wanted an offensive tackle. And obviously, you're sitting there, you only have pick number 18. You can't check both of those boxes with only one pick. So they made a calculated risk, thinking that they were going to be better next year, that their pick was going to be lower than, say, either 16 or 19 was going to be, and it was going to be justifiable. So you get two first-round picks in 2022. It was going to slingshot them to be better. They were going to get Michael Thomas back. The Jameis Winston was going to be better. The defense was going to be better, all that kinds of stuff. It didn't work out, and it clearly didn't work out to what you were saying, where this is a crash and burn. Like, they're not only are they not picking lower than 16 or 19, they're picking fourth. And that's abysmal. And even
that part I didn't expect.
And I don't think anybody really expected that. But that just kind of all of these trades, man, just go to the fact that like nothing is guaranteed. But I also agree with you. I pose the question like this because I think a lot of people are going to be asking it. There's a lot of teams that got burned from trading first round picks. So is it going to be a sign of caution moving forward? Are teams going to be less willing to do this, I guess, is what I'm saying. But to your point, I agree with you. No, I think that as long as you don't have hindsight involved, then look, every team that's making a deal when they make a deal thinks that they're getting the better of the trade. That's why you make the deal. You only make the deal if you think that it's going to help you. In all of these situations, you could argue that it was going to help all of these teams and that they would have been okay with it. And I don't really see that changing. It's hard to imagine that any franchise that would be willing to move on from a first round pick via a trade would think or believe that their roster wasn't in a spot where that was advantageous anyways. So I do, man. I think that we're just going to continue to keep this trend moving forward. I think people are going to continue to trade their first round picks, and especially when it's for quarterbacks and it's for these massive swings of the bat, I don't think there's going to be too much of a change there. So,
and one last caveat. Yeah,
go ahead.
The Eagles also got a 2024 second rounder
right
in that trade. So, like, right, you were right where you're betting on, you know, the over-under is 16.
Mm-hmm.
But even if they missed on that bet and they went over 16, they made up for it on the lovely points chart with the insurance of that second rounder. That's why they got that pick, because they were like, now we can't lose no matter where the pick is, because the value will always be on our side. It's either even or we win by a mile. They won by a mile.
They definitely
Howie's good, man. He's very good at this.
He is very good. Look, a lot of people like to go after GMs because it's an easy thing to do, because when the team doesn't play well for whatever reason, you can blame a lot of it on team building. But And another thing is that, like, being a general manager, especially in the draft world, it's a lot like baseball, right? Where you look at baseball hitters, and if a guy hit 400, right, if he got on base 4 out of 10 times, less than 50%, you'd call him a Hall of Famer, right? I don't know if the math is exactly like that for a general manager, but GMs are going to swing the bat and they're going to fail. That's just part of the job. That's what the job always is. You just want to make sure that you're still sound in your process and that you have logic behind everything that you're going to do. And I think that when things get bad for GMs, like if teams are disappointing one way or the other, it's very easy to point out a GM's mistakes. You know why? Because they're always going to exist. They're always going to be there. But you do have to kind of accept that, especially if you're an owner and you're in charge of these things, you can't be too rash with your decisions, and you have to say like, hey, yeah, like every general manager is going to miss. Yeah, maybe the team's a little bit disappointing, but were we okay with the moves? Were we okay with the logic of those moves? Did they make sense? Well, okay. Then the moves that we're going to make moving forward, we've got to have faith that they're also going to turn out, because the game is a little bit of luck, a little bit of chance as well. You know, you have to factor that in there. But anyways, now I'm going off on a tangent.
No, it's a great point. You're absolutely right. In a sense that, because I'm now, this isn't like a, you know, a flex in any sense, but people I've talked to that have either, you know, failed places or mm-hmm. worked for GMs that have failed, the thing they will always tell you is that they make those moves that fans kind of react to like, really? Like, that's the move you're making? Because you'd rather, like you said, Trevor, go up there and swing than take the chance of staring at three pitches down the middle and you're fired and you never get the shot again. And,
right.
You know, I think of it like all the GMs that don't get their chance because they tried to outline this four-year plan and they don't really do anything the first 2 years. And then the team stinks. And then the owner's like, you know what, let's just move on from this anyway.
Right.
And then you never get a shot again. So that mental part of it plays into why those moves get made.
Yep. No doubt about it. And shoot, we've talked a lot about Chris Ballard here on this podcast because mm-hmm. the Colts have been very much in the news, but like Ballard's even getting criticism for not swinging the bat, right? So, and I think that that's just my overarching thing here is that when you judge general managers, there will always be something to point to. Hey, you gave that guy a contract and he wasn't worth it. Hey, you made this draft pick and it wasn't worth it. Hey, you didn't make this move and it ended up not being worth it. That's just the general manager's job. And so going all the way back to Howie Roseman, like Howie Roseman has things that he failed at, right? Everybody, some of the draft picks, JJ Arcega-Whiteside, Andre Dillard, Jalen Reagor, right? A lot of these draft picks that just straight up did not pan out for them. And yet, here Howie sits, probably going to win executive of the year because of what he has been able to do. He's been able to overcome those mistakes because his process, I think, has been very sound, and he's continued to follow his gut, if you will, not be scared to do what he needs to do. And I think that that's an important quality for a general manager.
It's a great point. It really is. It's just part of the process, man, that guys have to pick their spot, but you do have to choose at some point.
And if any general man or if any NFL team owner is listening to this podcast, just so you know, Connor and I put it all out there. If you want us to co-GM a team, we can do that for you. Just I want to make sure that any NFL owner out there knows that we will co-GM your NFL team.
We are saying we will go balls to the wall when we get that job. That's what we're letting you know, is that we are going to it might not be well received. It might not even work.
We're going to try something. Four top 50 picks for Brian Burns. That's what we're going to do. No, okay, probably not.
Four.
Probably not.
Oh, man.
Okay, so I did want to highlight a little bit of the changes since this is the Stock Exchange podcast. I feel like a good way to talk about the draft order every single week is to identify some up and down with teams. Okay, Houston, we said they're number one. They were number one last week as well. Carolina and Las Vegas, they flipped spots. Last week, Carolina was picking number two. Now Las Vegas is picking number two. So Vegas kind of in the driver's seat there. Pittsburgh Steelers were picking four last week. This week, they're picking 10 because of their big win. Lions, they were picking fifth last week. They're picking 11th now, again, because of their big win. Philadelphia Eagles, they were picking sixth. Now they're picking fourth. Arizona Cardinals, seventh. Cardinals now at 13. They go way down because they won. Jacksonville was picking eight. Now they're picking five. Chicago Bears, nine. Now they're picking six. Green Bay at 10, now 14. Seattle took a jump. Seattle was 11. Now they're sitting there at seven. And then a couple of the other traded teams, they're moving up a little bit because all of those teams lost as well. Indianapolis, Atlanta Falcons, Washington Commanders, they're all still sitting around that 12 to 16 range. So not a ton of shakeup there. But Connor, I said that there's nine teams right now with three wins. Nine teams. They either have seven losses or six losses right now, depending on if they have had their bye week or not. That means that the margin for error, if you want a high pick, is very small. Every single win that you get right now is going to just drop you like a rock in the draft order. It's going to drop you out of the top five. It's going to drop you out of the top 10. It's going to get you all the way out of there, especially for the teams that were picking a lot higher due to their strength of schedule. But it looks like Pittsburgh, obviously one of the big movers in the wrong direction. Well, depending on how you look at it, going the wrong direction at 10, Detroit sitting there at 11. I feel like Detroit's one of those teams where, man, you'd love for both of those picks to be in the top 10. They got pick number 8 and they got pick number 11 right now, but for as much as I want to see
how far does that get you, right?
Yeah, right. I did. Detroit's one of those teams, man, that they got to get a little higher with those picks, I think. So that's kind of where mine immediately goes with Detroit picking 8 and 11 right now. You'd like both those picks in the top 10.
Imagine the Eagles are picking ultimately in its top 5. Now, I will say second, just to make this real fun, with that Saints pick, and they get both of the Lions picks to move back.
Well, that's the interesting part of this equation, is it if Philly ends up picking, I mean, even probably not top 4. If Philly can get to the number 2 overall pick, because here's the thing, Detroit needs a quarterback, right?
Yep.
Detroit needs a quarterback. They cannot go into next year with Jared Goff. There's not a big quarterback market outside of what Lamar Jackson is going to do. I don't think Lamar Jackson gets out of Baltimore ultimately. So the rest of what you have is, I mean, maybe an Aaron Rodgers kind of trade if that just goes absolutely off the rails. Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yep.
But, I mean, do you really want to invest in those guys? No, you need a young guy in there. So if Detroit's sitting here and they've got the, let's just say, 6th overall pick and 10th overall pick when it's all said and done, that's not good enough, I don't think. The quarterbacks that you want are probably going to be off the board at that point. And if Philly's sitting there at number 2 overall saying, you get one of Bryce Young or CJ Stroud, you just got to give me 6 and 10 to do it. Lions are probably doing that.
Yeah, I think so.
Lions are probably doing that. So,
and I agree with your other point. Like, I don't think those guys that you mentioned are better than Jared Goff right now.
You're saying it's taking Aaron Rodgers on for 50 mil, but, or taking on Derek Carr?
Yeah, or Jimmy G. Goff is definitely better than Jimmy G. I mean, Carr, there's an argument to be had, of course. Like, I think Goff, what people think Goff is versus what Goff actually is very different. And I'm not saying here I'm some Jared Goff stan or that he's a top 10 quarterback, but in that Lions offense, you could do a lot worse than Jared Goff, where if you're making the move, it needs to be substantially better, not almost lateral.
Here's the biggest issue for me on what's going on with the Detroit Lions. And I know we're spending a lot of time talking about the Lions, but I really I think that this team really controls the top 10, because depending on where one of these picks ends up, they're one of these teams that I think are going to have to get desperate, depending on where the quarterback market is by the time that we get to April. You say that you could do a lot worse than Jared Goff, and I agree that you could definitely do a lot worse than Jared Goff, but Jared Goff doesn't save Dan Campbell or Brad Holmes' jobs, I think.
Like, no, I agree.
If you go into next year with Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes still in place as the general manager and the head coach, you can't also have Jared Goff, because I can already tell you, you're not going to win enough football games to where those guys keep their job a year from now. So if that's the case, you might as well fire him now, and you might as well cut Jared Goff now, or one or the other. You can't run it back, is basically what I'm saying. So Detroit does have the ability to hold this draft, or at least the beginning of it, in the palm of their hand with what they end up doing. And I think that's a major point right there. You mentioned Houston as well. Houston sitting there at 1, Houston sitting there at 9 currently. So they have two top 10 picks. They also control a lot of this draft right now. So I don't know. What about the rest of the order? Anything really stick out to you as it stands today?
I think when Watson comes back, and not that Jacoby's been an issue, but it feels like the Browns, that Houston pick won't be top 10. We'll see. Mm-hmm. It feels like that there could be movement there. I mean, what really stands out to me, besides the musical chairs at quarterback with Houston, Las Vegas, Carolina, maybe Detroit trying to make some moves to get up into that conversation. Atlanta kind of already won too many games and they play competitive football, so that's of an issue. Is what that Jacksonville, Chicago area looks like for their young quarterbacks, right? You're assuming that Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields are the quarterbacks for 2023, no matter how they finish this season right now. They both had highs, they both had lows this year, but they are obviously going to get that year 3, as they should. Jacksonville's at 5, Chicago's at 6. The two questions are, what do they need to get those guys over the top? And is it present in the draft? And I think offensive line right away, because I don't really see this draft as at the moment of having a playmaker that goes in the top six picks that you think is going to change the game for you. And I don't really think either line has been overly good where you can sit there and say, man, they don't need a cornerstone in that spot.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Chicago, and I think that their offensive line has been a lot better as of late run blocking, right? But that goes back to kind of what we've talked about on Monday podcast. They know their identity. Like, Chicago clearly knows their identity now for this year, and it's running the football. It's either running the football in Khalil Herbert or David Montgomery's hands, or it's Justin Fields keeping it himself and adding another element to the run game. In order for the Chicago Bears to progress, in order for them to actually become a threat, they then have to pass the ball better. Not only is that a thing about Justin Fields himself passing the ball better, being more accurate, getting the ball placement where it needs to be, that also means you got to get better pass blockers on the offensive line. You've got to address some of that. And of course, you've got to get better playmakers in the passing game as well. They went and they traded for Chase Claypool, so they're hoping that that's an addition for them there. But I truly believe that they're still missing that wide receiver one type. If they can go out and get a wide receiver one type, and I don't know if that's in that draft. I mean, maybe it's Quentin Johnston, but I also think, I'm going to be honest with you, I like Quentin Johnston. I think he's a good wide receiver. I think we're overvaluing for him for just because the rest of the class doesn't really give you the ability that he does. I'm curious, is it you kind of, okay, so you do agree there.
I look at it like this, because I try to think back to last year. I don't think he's better than Drake London.
No.
I don't think he's better than Garrett Wilson.
Nope.
I don't think he's better than J-Mo.
Nope. He's not better than Chris Olave.
I think Olave had a way higher floor coming into the league, a way more projectable floor.
Yeah.
Who am I missing that went really early? Jahan Dotson went early.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of the book to be written on Quentin Johnson's rest of his season and the evaluation, but I agree, Trevor. I think that's the issue, is that I think we've been really spoiled with these guys that come in and can elevate young quarterbacks right away. Mm-hmm. And I just haven't found that guy, unless he goes through a perfect situation, in this class. Mm-hmm. Like, if you stick, right, like Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who's been hurt, in, you know, the end of round one, and you put him wherever, you know, the Ravens, the Chiefs, the Packers, these wide receiver needy teams, the Cowboys. Ravens. You're like, yeah, he's going to have a good rookie season. When you put those guys at the top of the draft with offenses that are still trying to get their feet wet, you're like, I don't know. I don't know yet.
I just don't know how much they move the needle, you know?
Yeah.
I'd love for there to be an absolute superstar. Like, I'd love for there to be Garrett Wilson or Drake Olave, Chris Olave. Yeah, doing the Dragon Ball Z, you know, thing where they synchronize and they become the same person, Drake Olave. I can't remember what that movie is called. No, it's going to eat me alive all day for it, but this class is just missing that. And so when we do a lot of these, I think the Jacksonville, that is a main catalyst to why they made the deal for Calvin Ridley. I think they're doing a lot of future scouting. They're looking at the upcoming free agency class of wide receivers, not very strong. They're looking at this potential 2023 NFL draft class. And though there is some to like, it's not like there's that home run star that's right there. So I think both of those teams, going back to what our original question was, I think both of those teams are probably going to look offensive line as well. And we've got some good offensive linemen who seem to be emerging this year. Peter Skoronski, Paris Johnson. I mean, like, a lot of these
Olu Fashanu, Broderick Jones.
All of these dudes are kind of like coming to the forefront of like, all right, they're all probably going to go top 20. You know, a lot of these dudes are going to go top 20. So
yeah, I agree.
You will be okay with that right there. Something I wanted to ask you. Philly's sitting there at four. Okay. Let's say they don't trade back. You're at four and you're the Philadelphia Eagles. Three quarterbacks are off the board. Just have a little fun. Let's just say the three quarterbacks are off the board.
I know where you're going.
Will Anderson or Jalen Carter, who are you picking?
Oh, man.
There's no wrong answer.
No, there's not.
And by no wrong answer, I mean they're both wrong answers, because whoever wants the other guy is going to come after you in the comments, which is why I asked you about it.
So here's my answer, and I will not sit on the fence. For the Eagles, it's Will Anderson.
I think
Jalen Carter has been the better player this year.
Yes. Yes, I would agree. I would agree wholeheartedly that Jalen Carter has been the better player.
Confidently, I think Jalen Carter has been the better, more impactful football player this year.
See, now I'm going back and forth. Now I go back and forth a lot on this, and now you're making me, now that I'm saying it out loud, I feel like Jalen Carter's the right pick.
But I still think Will Anderson's really, really good, and I think the Eagles need an edge for next year. You get Fletcher back on a one-year deal. Hargrave has been really good. Milton Williams.
Is Hargrave a free agent?
I thought he has one more year. I'm going to check right now.
I'm going to look.
I thought he signed a three-year. Jamal he signed Hargrave. A three-year deal. Oh, it voids. He is a free agent.
Yeah, it turns into void
years. Oh, buddy,
years.
Boy's going to get paid again.
Oh, wow, yeah. He's only 30 next year, and he's playing really well this year.
He's a really good player.
Buddy, wow. Wow, the Eagles put some void years on this bad boy. You see this?
Three of them.
They got three void years on this.
Yep.
Howie, you're an absolute madman. And they have Jordan Davis as well, right? Remember that, too.
Yes, yes, you know? Of course. God, as I stare at our lads because he's on the IR, how could I forget Jordan Davis? So I think it's Will Anderson.
Okay, all right.
I do.
I think it might be Jalen Carter.
Is he just too good? Is that the question? He's just such a good player.
If I was finalizing a big board right now, I'd have Jalen Carter above Will Anderson.
I might too, which is crazy. Not crazy, because it's just that I think Will Anderson is so good. It goes to show you what Jalen Carter has done.
Is Fletcher Cox going to be there one more year?
For like a month.
Is Fletcher Cox going to be there?
He's on a one-year deal.
Yeah, he is on a one-year deal, isn't he? Because I would love...
So that lets you move on from one of them.
But I would love a world where Jalen Carter...
Void years.
Who does? Who does?
Fletcher Cox.
No three way! Does he really?
Yeah, him and Hargrave. Him and Hargrave both have three void years.
Howie, you absolute animal.
He's
an
animal, man.
I would love a world where Fletcher Cox is back for one more year and could legitimately teach Jalen Carter more of his, like, pass rush savviness. And then it's, you know,
yeah,
year two of Jordan Davis in the NFL, and then Jalen Carter with Fletcher Cox mentoring him. I think that you have then.
Oh, I love that.
It just that the idea of that is so tempting to me. Honestly, if the draft were today, if I was finalizing a big board today, I think I would actually take Jalen Carter for the Eagles instead of Will Anderson.
I also think Fletcher will come back. I think it'll be an affordable way. I think he'll come back.
How old is he?
He is 32 on December 13th.
Okay. Because what didn't he think about retiring?
Yeah. I mean, he's not obviously what he was, but I think you can get him back in the mold how they brought Kelsey back this year to mentor the next guy up. How Kelsey is mentoring Cam Jurgens. Kelsey helped them draft Cam Jurgens. I think there's a player relationship in that building that they would go to Fletcher, have him scout Jalen Carter if he was interested, and if they drafted Jalen, Fletcher would come back on a team-friendly-ish deal and handle that role of, I'm going to get this young D-line room right before I go into the sunset.
Ooh, they do have That's Milton Williams. Think. They do have Milton Williams as well. Does that move the needle for you at all?
Yep.
I mean, like... Yeah, maybe.
I haven't seen him play this year.
Maybe it is.
Obviously, when they took him, he was a project-ish kind of player. Nobody thought Milton Williams was going to come in and light the league on fire. I'm going to pull up his he is playing a lot of snaps this
well,
year.
Well, that's because
he's going to be...
Davis is out.
Jordan Davis is out.
Yeah, so
but even before he got...
So
yeah, you're right. His snaps have gone up a little since Jordan Davis is out. But he's consistently getting 15 to 35-ish snaps a game. He's not putting up the pass rush production I thought he would.
Who, Williams?
He's only got four hurries, one quarterback hit, one sack.
Hmm.
So, and once again, I'd rather watch the tape before I write off Milton Williams, because I think he could still be effective. But that's not stopping you from the Jalen Carter plan, right?
No, probably not. Probably.
Not much in this world is.
No, there's not much stopping Jalen Carter on the field. There's not much that would stop my love for Jalen Carter as a draft prospect. Before we kind of move on, because I do want to get to our three players that we're talking about for stock market. Houston, Las Vegas, Carolina. We thinking quarterback, because it gets interesting now. What are we doing? Forcing Will Levis all the way up there?
Yeah.
Or Carolina's currently sitting there at third. Let's say Bryce Young, CJ Stroud goes boom, boom, 1-2. Or actually, how about I pose it to you this way? You got three teams at the top, Houston, Las Vegas, Carolina. All three of them need a quarterback. Let's say there's only two to go around. Let's say the only two that these teams deem worthy are Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. Which one of these teams, though, would be most likely to not take a quarterback? Is it the Raiders?
Yeah, it's Vegas.
Them picking it two. So what do you think? They'd pick one of Will Anderson or Jalen Carter? That would probably be what they do.
They would take Jalen Carter. They've needed that interior player for a while.
They do need an interior player. Their O-line's so bad, though, man.
It's tricky.
If the Raiders are sitting there, honestly, they might do the same thing that the Eagles, that the Eagles would do. And if the Raiders are sitting there at two, you trade with Detroit's two first-round picks, and you get two first-round picks out of it.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. I mean...
I answered my own question, but...
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think that... I almost feel like it's best for both sides for Carr to get a fresh start somewhere else, but I don't... You never know what Mark Davis is thinking. These press conferences don't mean anything this time of year, but if I was a betting man right now, I would put it at 60-40 that McDaniels and that New England-ish front office is back. As much as Sunday night, we were like, hey, you got it wrong. Just admit it. I'm not there yet that's happening.
There has to be a solution, right? You can't just fire a guy with no direction. You can't just be emotional about it and be like, wow, we lost the Jeff Saturday Colts. Get the hell out of here. You have to fire a guy within a plan afterwards to immediately recover off of that. So if they have the plan and they like the contingency plan, then you can move on from them. But if not, like if there's not another coach that they think could be a better option that they want to take over that team or whatever it is, then you don't. And you're probably going to roll with them the next year.
And keep this in mind. I'm looking this up right now. They reached a contract settlement with Gruden, it looks like, about a year ago.
Okay.
So you paid out Gruden to an undisclosed amount. Are you going to fire McDaniels after this year and then hire another coach? Are you firing the GM that McDaniels brought with him for this job? How many guys are you paying at once? And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. These guys are billionaires.
Right.
I'm saying how they think. They don't like having multiple guys on the payroll that do not work for them.
They do not work for them.
They don't like that.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know.
Something to think about here.
Something to think about. All right. We'll get to our three guys that we're going to talk about here on the stock market episode to give you some extra prospects to have on your radar for the remainder of what is the regular season college football, just a couple of weeks left. But before we get to that, got to talk to you about our friends over at Mojo. They're posing a question to you. All right. What if you could have invested in Tom Brady stock as a rookie? If you would have done that, your investment would have been worth over 4,000% today. Now it's not just a what if, but a who's next. Thanks to Mojo, the all new sports stock market that lets you invest in your favorite athletes and cash in on your passions. You can sign up right now on the Apple App Store to get your first free stock, potentially worth up to tens of thousands of dollars if you play your cards right. Over 300 players are listed on Mojo, so you can invest in rookies like Kenneth Walker, Garrett Wilson, Drake Olave. No, of course, it's either Drake London or Chris Olave. You can't split it. Well, maybe you can with Mojo. I don't know. Comeback players like Saquon Barkley, superstars like Patrick Mahomes. You can go along and make your money when an underrated diamond in the rough breaks out, or you can even short sell an overrated rival if you think that somebody's on the down. So if you think they're a little overrated right now.
Diabolical.
It is diabolical, but look, we're out here to try to make money. How else are we going to become co-GMs one day, you know? Prices move with every play, every game, every headline, and you can buy and sell instantly anytime all year long, so the action never stops. Mojo is live in New Jersey, so download Mojo in the Apple App Store today. Start turning your playmakers into moneymakers. You must be 21 years or older to use Mojo and located in New Jersey to make trades. If you got a gambling problem, help is available at 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit mojo.com for more info. Also got to remind you guys about Symbol. You guys have heard us talk about them before, but our sponsor, Symbol, has their best offer yet for new users. Symbol is offering $500 risk-free deposit right now for new users who join the stock market for sports. When you sign up with the code NFLSE, you get your first deposit with a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you were hesitant about joining or simply have not done it yet, now you can do so with a risk-free deposit. Reminder, Symbol lets you trade pro and college teams like stocks and even earn cash dividend payouts when your teams win. Symbol is a peer-to-peer market that took the thrill of sports betting and turn it into a stock market, which we absolutely love. It's right up our alley, to give fans a new way to speculate for their favorite pro and college teams. Now you can join with a $500 money back guarantee. Download the Symbol app for iOS by searching S-I-M-B-U-L-L in the App Store using the promo code NFLSE to get your risk-free deposit up to $500. Whether you want to invest in up-and-coming teams like, well, shoot, I can't even say the New York Giants or the New York Jets anymore because they're already on the up, baby. Ain't no up and coming about it. They're at the top. Or
they're Amazon now, dude.
It's true. It's true. You're too late for them. Now you got to get somebody else. Or the top dogs, Philadelphia Eagles, Minnesota Vikings, Kansas City Chiefs, whatever it is. Symbol allows you to buy and sell team stocks and profit from your sports knowledge. Look, I'm a New York Jets stock holder in Symbol. Still haven't sold it, baby.
It's true.
I still believe.
Those payouts, man.
I still believe.
Those payouts have been real nice.
They're going to contribute to my Christmas gifts this year.
I thought about this during your ad read.
Mm-hmm.
In our lifetime, do you think that we'll ever see a media member, like a draft media member, make it to GM? Let's put our life expectancy at a low bar of 60 years old each. So we got about almost 30 full years.
Make it to the GM seat?
Tricky, right? Eileen, no.
You know, it's a lot closer to yes.
It's a lot more, yeah.
Right. Right. It's a lot closer than it was before. I don't know. I would love to see it. Obviously, we got Mayock. You know, like, we got Mayock to that seat. It didn't go very well, but it did happen. We did get Mayock there.
Did not go very well. No, yeah, I don't bring that one up a lot anymore. I know baseball and hockey and basketball have actually been much more open to hires like that in scouting or executive positions. Football is a big gatekeeping league in a way, yeah, where I think it's going to take a little bit for that door to open, because God forbid somebody does it and is good at it.
Right.
It's problematic.
Floodgates.
Anyway.
All right, let's get to the stock market portion of the show. Talking about these player prospects. Who's going up? Who's going down? Connor, who's your first guy you want to bring to the table today?
First one today is Tuipulotu. Yeah, D-line from USC, somebody that I don't remember how much he got on our summer scouting episode, but I know he was definitely involved in some capacity, and he's been really good this year. He's officially gotten double-digit sacks on the year after a really big – he kind of devoured Colorado's offensive line last week. He had two sacks. One was a strip sack, three more hurries on top of that. Saw speed to power, just drove a tackle back into the quarterback's lap on one play. Rip move. He looks really good, man. He looks really, really good. I know it feels like scouting for the pack always kind of turns up late. You hear less buzz on pack players, it feels like, maybe because they're playing at later games or just the West Coast or whatever it may be. And obviously it's not a conference that overwhelmingly floods with NFL draft talent, but there's absolutely plenty of really high-end talent. So Tully looks really, really good, man, in an edge class that just gets deeper by the week. Trevor, every time I go into our database or watch some more edge players, or counting all the guys from summer, I don't know besides Will Anderson if it's a star loaded edge class,
right?
But it feels like there's a lot of capable pass rushers that will go from rounds 2 to 4 this year.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good way to put it. Even back into the first round, I think we know that edge rushers are going to get there. So you may not see a ton of edge rushers in the top 20, but I do feel like this class is lending itself to there being a lot of edge rushers in the top 100, you know, like as you get towards the end of the third round, as we get into the fourth round as well, there's just going to be a lot of different edge rushers. So it's good. I'm glad that you're throwing him on the radar. I feel like we've brought a lot of new guys to the table on top of what we were able to do in summer scouting as well. So always good to get edge rushers, man. The NFL is are always going to go after different kinds of pass rushers, different guys with shapes and sizes to play in even fronts and odd fronts, guys that are more speed, guys that are more power, lighter guys, heavier guys, whatever it is. Edge rush play is just there's so much of a preference on it, so many different things that you could do, that it's good to make sure that you cast a wide net when you're in your scouting profiles and when you're building out your big boards, just because, you know, the NFL is going to covet these different guys for different teams. Speaking of some guys with some unique builds, all shapes and sizes, how about a cornerback that's 6'2", 205 pounds? I'm talking about Jalen Jones, the corner from Texas A&M. He has started all 28 games of his college career going back to 2020 as a true freshman, which is pretty damn impressive. Obviously, the measurables totally stick out to you when you're looking at cornerbacks. A lot of the average height, I think, for a corner in the NFL is right around 5'10 and a half, 5'11. So anytime you get a guy who's above 6 foot, it's somebody who's worth noting to see, okay, can this guy play? Can we make something out of this guy? Because he's giving you plus in the build and the measurables. Jones, I'll say that the reason why you like bigger corners is the prospect of them being able to come up on you, play in man coverage, get their hands on you in press, and be able to hang with some of these wide receivers one-on-one. Not sure that's Jones' game. For as much as there is a lot to like, and I feel like he's playing really well this year, I know Mike Renner likes him a lot. I know he's in the top, I think, 25 of Mike Renner's updated top 100 big board.
Wow.
He is very patient. He's very calm. It doesn't seem like there's any panic in his game, but he's not the kind of guy that's going to come up to the line of scrimmage, I think, and press you with a ton of success. He's an off cover three kind of a corner, and he'll give you a little bit of a cushion, but he manages the cushion well. He doesn't really get beat deep over the top. But I will say that when he's got to open up and when he's got to run deep down the field with guys, sometimes the athleticism doesn't always show up. So that makes me think, all right, there's a reason why they're playing him in off coverage. There's a reason why they're not playing him up close towards the line scrimmage. It's because he might get beat over the top a little bit more than you'd like. But he seems to really understand the space that he gives wide receivers right off the snap. Makes him a really nice cover three corner, a really nice zone corner. I think that he's got that Saban shuffle, if you will, mastered, how he gets down the field where he doesn't have to fully flip his hips and turn and have his back to the ball. He can really squeeze you to the sideline, limit that kind of ability and route stem from a wide receiver where, you know, he'll just keep retreating a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage. And all of a sudden you're using that out of bounds marker almost as like as an extra defender. So he's very smart in that regard. And I like the way that he plays there. Again, a patient dude, seems to have a calmness to his game. There's not a lot of panic, which is great, but the athleticism is just the big thing for me. If you're running a cover three system, he seems to know what his assignments are really well, and he seems to be in control and in charge of his zones. But you don't want him running one-on-one even with a lot of wide receivers at the NFL level. I just don't know if he's going to keep up. I'll say this too. Last thing, I'll end with a positive on him. Physical guy. You know, when he does get up and get hands on you, he's comfortable with it. He likes it. He prefers it. He's also a really nice tackler. A lot of the key plays that we have in our database are of him getting through blocks, coming up towards the line of scrimmage, making tackles either when the ball arrives or in the backfield or not too far after that, you know, not giving guys a lot of yards after the catch. So definitely not afraid to be physical. I know a lot of teams are going to love that in his profile. They're going to love his length as well. Maybe a little bit of a worry with that with the top end athleticism, but if you're a team that predominantly plays cover three, you're going to like the length and you're going to like the mentality of Jalen Jones from Texas A&M.
A lot of teams looking for cover three, quarters coverage, split holds kind of corners that are big like that and play with awareness. And man, if you're a bigger corner, you just get a little bit of a boost on boards
always, for a lot of teams,
and rightly so. I mean, I don't want to use Tariq Woolen for everything, but it feels like every year there was a Tariq Woolen, not level athlete, but bigger project corner. And when they hit like he has, it's just worth taking that swing. And certain teams even have thresholds for corner size that'll help a player like that. So another one for me, who it's fascinating because he's just lighting it up, but I have no idea truly where his draft process is going to go. And that's Tanner Mordecai, the quarterback for SMU.
Yes.
I mean, he's got 11 touchdowns in his last two games. He threw 9 against Houston, and he's got 15 touchdowns in his last 5 games. Obviously at SMU, they throw the ball all over the yard, but Trevor, this week against USF, he had 6 big time throws and his completion percentage was 81.5.
Nice.
You watch some of those big time throws. There was one that was dropped that was a deep outside the numbers throw in the bucket. That was just beautiful. Beautiful. I mean, Mordecai's interesting, right? He's a former 4-star, transferred from Oklahoma. He's really, really turned it on this year for SMU. I did some research before this show to figure out where he might stand. There was 36. This is a tweet from Joseph Hoyt, who covers a lot of college, it looks like, for Dallas News. He said 36 quarterbacks featured on the Senior Bowl watch list. Tanner Mordecai, a redshirt senior, was not one. So, I mean, obviously he's played really well this year. His stock up. His stock is up. Maybe not a Senior Bowl quarterback. Maybe not a guy that declares. He has that extra year of eligibility if he wants it, but maybe a Shrine quarterback, maybe NFLPA. Very interesting how you evaluate someone that he's 6'3", 215. He's making beautiful throws. He's super productive. What is his process going to look like? I'm excited to dive in.
Yeah, that's very interesting that he wasn't on that list. I mean, you mentioned the NFL always kind of going after corners who are a little bit bigger, have a little bit more length to them. I feel like if you're a quarterback and you got a lot of big time throws, the NFL is going to take a chance on you too, right? All you got to do is hit it big on one quarterback and everything could be different for you. So I wonder if that'll change as we get closer to draft season, if he ends up declaring where he ends up going for an all-star game. Because I do think he's going to end up at one of them. It's just where he ends up going. I want to highlight DeJuan Jones, the offensive tackle for Ohio State. We've talked a lot about Paris Johnson Jr. on the other side of things, their left tackle. Well, Ohio State's right tackle has been getting some pub lately as well. And I hadn't had a chance to really get some eyes on him. And I did earlier this week, was able to watch a couple of games of him. And I'll just give you guys my thoughts on him. So he's 6'8", 360 pounds. The man
is skyscraper alert.
He reminds you of Mekhi Becton. He really does. I was reading a story up on DeJuan Jones as I was doing some background information, and he's actually lost weight. I think he was right around 375, 380 is what the article was saying, and he had to lose a little bit of weight, lost about 10, 15 pounds coming into the season. And Jones said he felt great after even just taking off 10 to 15 pounds. He felt healthier. He felt more balanced. He felt more in control. And he actually said that he wants to eventually get down to 345, 350. And I think that's probably the comfortable weight for him that you want to see him get to. As you would expect from a player who is that big, I mean, if you get in between the shoulders of this guy, it's over. I mean, there's just, if he starts running and he's got his full momentum to you, there's not much that you could do, whether you're a linebacker, a defensive tackle, a defensive end. He is definitely going to absolutely run you over. He played left tackle very sparingly as a freshman and a sophomore at Ohio State before finding a home at right tackle, which he's been able to start over the last 2 years. True senior, so he's got that senior tag, so it's his fourth year at Ohio State. For reference, Mekhi Becton was about 6'7", 365 pounds. They do have somewhat similar styles. I would say that Jones is not as much of a bully. He's not as aggressive in the run game. Like, Mekhi Becton would absolutely erase you in the run game. I don't see that kind of a mean streak with DeJuan Jones. But when I say that they're similar, what I'm talking about is more of the negatives, unfortunately, because for as much as this is a sport where the saying rings true, big people beat up little people, and you're always just trying to get the bigger giants on your team because it often goes well for you. Jones, unfortunately, the natural negatives of being that big show up. One way is that just a lot of mass to move, man. And so he's not going to be able to fire off the ball, the arms, the legs, the shoulders, the everything. It's just not going to move as fast as it is for, say, when you watch Paris Johnson Jr. right on the other side of the line of scrimmage when he's boom, firing off the snap, getting his hands up, getting into his kick slide, like all the, it's just like, boom, boom, boom. You can see the athleticism there, but Paris Johnson Jr. is what? 310, 315, right? He's got about 50 less pounds on him than DeJuan Jones does. And I do think that Jones moves decently well for a player of his size, but anytime you're that big, there's only so fast you can go, right? It's like how people talk about Darnell Washington, the tight end at Georgia, right? When I watch Darnell Washington, I'm like, yeah, he's athletic for his size, but he still ain't moving like super well. And it's, you know, what can you expect? He's just so big. You're trying to move so much mass. So with DeJuan Jones, anytime he's trying to execute any kind of zone blocking where you're getting him to go horizontal, it's a little tough. Anytime you're asking him to reach block, even though he's big, it's tough because he's got to move around. He's got to flip the hips and he's got to, you know, he's got to turn the shoulders and he's got to make sure he beats the offensive lineman to the spot. If you're asking him to climb to the second level, yeah, he can get up there. Yeah, he's a little bit lighter on the feet to get to the second level. But I feel like I saw a lot of defenders get across his face very easily just because it's tough for him to keep up with them. Those guys are moving and exploding a lot faster than he is able to. I will also say that an area of his game that has to get better is naturally when he stands up as a 6'8" individual, the hands are up here just because he's way taller. So if he's going up against a 6'1", 6'2" edge rusher who can really get down into their stance in a 3-point stance or a 4-point stance, you're losing the leverage battle. Those hands are naturally, as DeJuan Jones comes out of his stance, those hands are going up here, and automatically there were a couple times that Penn State game specifically where whoever he was going up against on the edge just simply got their hands basically on the forearm of DeJuan Jones. And then it's like, okay, well, now he can't even get to you. Now you're losing the leverage. Now you're probably losing the rep. So that is one thing that he has to get better at as he gets to the NFL level is the hands have to get faster. He's got to get so much faster with his hands because he has to keep them lower on his body. They have to be able to fire up. He can't get out of his stance and have his hands up here like some other offensive tackles that are even like 6'3", 6'4", sometimes he's 6'5", can do because he's just, when he does that, they're too high. They're just too high up in the air. So I feel like he loses the leverage battle a little bit too much. I know a lot of people like him because he's a mammoth human being. I know Mekhi Becton went in the first round. I don't know if DeJuan Jones is going to be my cup of tea. I don't think that he's going to be a first rounder. In my book, I think he's going to be more somebody you maybe take a chance on in the third round, but he is intriguing because I do think that he moves decently well since he lost weight. And I'd like to see if he continues to lose a little bit of weight. Does he get a little bit faster? Does that body move a little bit quicker?
He's a massive human being. It's truly one of those things where you turn on the end zone angle of the all 22. And he's just the guy that jumps out to you. Right. He's got on sleeves most of the time, red sleeves that make him look even bigger because he's already huge. The way his stance is, I wonder if his process is kind of like Falele's last year, where you look at him and go, man, he's so big. But with that comes limitations that he's going to be very scheme specific. Like the Ravens taking Falele was like, duh. Of course they did, with what their run concepts are, what they ask of tackles, how they develop offensive linemen, how they specifically develop bigger, clunkier, but powerful offensive linemen in this era. But I'll say this for Jones, what's incredible for him is that he's not allowed a sack this year. He's not allowed a quarterback hit. He's allowed three hurries. I mean, he is... Even on his bad reps, Trevor, he's hard to run around. He's just tough to get around and pass pro. That was always a selling point for Becton. He's just that big where it's very hard to beat a guy, even if – but I agree with you. With the hand usage, being a skyscraper tackle actually comes with a lot of disadvantages too, and it's worked against guys like, to an extent, Falele. The Florida tackle that Seattle took 2 years ago, oh, man. He was 6'9", 6'10".
Who was it?
Forsythe was his name, right?
Was it Stone Forsythe? Was Stone Forsythe that big? Was
he that big? Oh, my God, he's gigantic. He doesn't weigh as much as DeJuan Jones, but he's 6'8".
Okay, all right, then, yeah. There you go, Stone Forsythe.
Yeah, so just playing that high, naturally.
Yeah, it's
not
tough.
Because of anything you're doing.
You really got to think about it.
Yep.
You really got to think about it.
My last one here, Jamie Robinson, the safety from Florida State, he got a Senior Bowl invite. There's a video of him, of he like taped the invite. I haven't seen on the Senior Bowl account that the invite's accepted, but I'm assuming Jamie Robinson is going to be at the Senior Bowl. I got to watch a lot of him this week. I really just like his demeanor as a safety. He's sub 6 feet tall. You'd never know. Physical run defender, plays fast downhill, just an edge to his game. He loves running around and kind of being the tough guy in the room. He hits hard. He's got 128 snaps in the slot, 247 at free, 176 in the box, and he has special teams experience on kick and punt coverage. So Jamie nice. Robinson, he is going to be a cup of tea for coaches. That Florida State defense, it's a couple guys like this that are going to be very, very well liked by the NFL scouting community. I already know Jared Verse is getting rave reviews, and we've right. talked a lot about him on this show. But Jamie Robinson is the other guy on that defense that he's just awesome, man. He's just awesome. Fans are going to really, really like him. I think if he does ultimately go to the Senior Bowl and accept that invite that is in his hands right now, he will be he will have a lot of fans for that safety room right away.
I'll end it with another safety as well. You know, this is a guy that we talked about in summer scouting and somebody that I wanted to check back in on, because as people have started to release their top 50s, top 100s, I've seen his name in there probably around like the 70, 60, sometimes 50 range as well. J.L. Skinner, the safety from Boise State, who we watched over the summer, and this is just pure hitter, right? I mean, this guy is 6'4", 220 pounds. I remember saying that he came to Boise State weighing 180, 185, and they've packed 40 pounds on this guy. And it's funny because you look at his frame, I'm rewatching him this week, and I'm like, you could fit more weight on this guy. He's just a big, long secondary player, plays a lot of box safety, a lot of downhill stuff. He mentioned that his favorite safety of all time is Cam Chancellor, and he actually absolutely plays like it. Definitely got a physicality to his game. He plays a lot of different spots. He plays nickel defender. He plays as a free safety, plays as a strong safety, but it feels like he's best when he's getting to go downhill. Ultimately, Connor, after watching him again, and this year hasn't been as good as last year was, but he's still fine. I'm wondering if it's possible that you just maybe throw another 15, 20 pounds on this dude and call him a linebacker. Like, that's what he does
for guys like that.
You know, and it's what he does best. And I'm worried that if you even streamline him to be mostly a box safety at the next level, if you make him be a strong safety, there's going to be times where the offense really manipulates the way that you line up to where he's going to have to go up against tight ends. He's going to end up going against slot receivers. And I just don't think that that's where his bread and butter is. I would rather put him in a comfortable spot where, of course, if he's playing linebacker, sometimes that could be the case as well. But I really do think that his best players are when he goes downhill. It's when he's his fastest. It's when he's his most confident. And it's clearly what he wants to do. He wants to tackle. He wants to hit. I like to throw some extra weight on him and honestly see what he would be like as a linebacker, because I'm just not so sure he's going to be the athlete that you need him to be to play as a full-time secondary player. So that's when I looked at J.L. Skinner. I wondered if I'd see something different, because I remember I liked him in the summer, but I didn't love him in the summer. Some other people did. And I kind of feel the same way after watching a couple of games from this season. I feel like maybe a transition to a different position at the NFL level might be in his future, depending on how much more weight you can get on that frame. And it looks like he can stand to get a little bit bigger. You can throw some extra weight on there. You know, just get on the Little Caesars diet or the peanut butter sandwich at 3 a.m. You know, you're setting protein your alarm, shake, waking it up, you know, throwing up protein shake and a PB&J there in the middle of the night and making it happen. So I don't know. Maybe that's in the cards for him. But if not, if he's staying at safety, I don't know, man. I should probably still see a day three guy with him unless we're seeing something different.
Did you mention, too, he's officially accepted his invite for the Senior Bowl?
No, I didn't. I did not.
Yes. So J.L. Skinner, another safety room's obviously coming together. Assuming Jamie Robinson accepts his, J.L. Skinner did accept his invite for the Senior Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with you, Trevor. He's built like a small forward. It's really interesting.
Like,
he's just this tall, upright guy. You see him in even pictures without pads on. There's a picture of him holding up the invite with some staff members, and he's just tall, lanky. I mean, there's just so many guys like that in the NFL right now that are listed as a safety, but they really play in the box. There's no teams really run out there with three traditional linebackers on a majority of snaps anymore. So if you have a third guy that's this hybrid kind of guy, Yeah, I'm with you. That's absolutely his role. And maybe that's something that they will discuss down there for when he gets down to Mobile to get some looks. So, honestly, loaded show today. My God. For the midweek show, we have a lot. We just have more and more to cover with the draft right now. It's becoming more relevant as seasons are, you know, sorry to those fan bases, but they're over and they move on to huge expectations. And I mean, it was interesting waking up this week, and I sat down, and like, while I did NFL stuff, and it was a little different because the Jets were on the bye, I was like, man, I'm updating the doc for Senior Bowl invites, Shrine invites. Guys that might declare, guys that are on the rise, guys that I've heard from agents are thinking about declaring and don't know what to do. And it's an exciting time of year.
Of course it is. Of course it is. That's why the show is loaded. That's why every Wednesday show is going to be loaded, and it's got to be must listen for you guys. Thursday show, it's always a wild card. So we'll leave that to the mystery.
I got a request.
You mean from is this from you or from somebody else?
No, from a sex addict.
Okay. The
people are screaming for us to fix the Raiders.
Really?
Maybe
we got to fix the Raiders.
We might have to fix the Raiders. Trevor and I will text through it after
the
show.
We're going to fix the Raiders at some point.
It's going to happen. That is such a full transparency for why I'm hesitant to do it now. That's a huge episode. Like, the Raiders have a massive fan base.
Right.
They're very passionate about the offseason. They're very passionate about this disaster right now.
I
want this episode to be like as perfect as it can be.
I almost want to say, I don't think we can do the Raiders yet because there's a chance that McDaniels is literally gone. So I don't know if I want to do the episode until we know a little bit more about who's going to stay, who's going to go.
I agree. And I selfishly also want their draft slot to be more solidified when we do their show.
Maybe we'll give it a couple weeks.
Want to shout out Raider Nation to let them know it's on our brains.
It is coming at some point. It's not going to come this Thursday, but that is an episode that I definitely want to get into, because when we do those Fix Your Franchise episodes, we dive deep. We go into everything. We go into how they got to that point. We go to the regime, who's staying, who's going. We go to salary caps. We go to draft picks. We go to potential head coaches. We go to outlook. We go to everything. So for the Raiders, I do want a little bit more clarity before we get there. Shoot, I can tell you what I would want them to do, but if it's not realistic, then I also feel like it's kind of pointless for the people. We want to probably give them something a little bit that they can look forward to. So we'll keep Thursday open, but yeah, it's a good shout out. Good shout out there to Raiders fans to make sure they know that the Fix Your Franchise episode is absolutely coming. We are definitely going to get to voicemails tomorrow. No matter what the topic is, no matter what we're doing, we're going to get to a handful of your voicemails. Speakpipe.com/NFLSE. It is a super simple thing where when you go to that website, you can just record your voice. Say what's up to us. We would love to hear your name if you're comfortable giving that, because we want to give you a shout out on the show. We want to give you a shout out by name because we appreciate you listening. So like, tell us your name and then just get off a take. Like, whether it's a draft take, whether it's a playoff take, whether it's a team take, whether you're there to
holidays,
brag. Right? Sure.
I mean, Thanksgiving.
Like,
tell us
if you want us to rank Thanksgiving dishes, if you want us to rank light beers, hot sauces, literally. I mean, like with this speak pipe thing, it could be anything. It could be a
top
cool
three hangovers of all time. Whatever you want.
Oh,
we have to answer.
What would be my top three?
Oh, man. That will be a really good summer show one day. I promise you that.
It would be a good summer show. Maybe we can sneak one of those in, though. So,
you're not wrong.
Speakpipe.com/NFLSE. Hit the voicemails. Let us know what you want us to talk about, what you guys want to talk about. And then we'll see what the rest of Thursday's episode brings. I am Trevor Sikkema. That is Connor Rogers. Thank you guys so much for listening to the NFL Stock Exchange Podcast. We'll see you on Thursday.